Rougned Odor. You are the man, and we'll talk about you on today's podcast. Welcome, everybody. It's July 23rd. I thought we were getting a nerd show today, but
nope.
Slightly less nerdy.
Nope,
Scott White.
Get the jock in here.
Oh, yeah. Sporty Scott White is on today with Chris Towers. I'm Adam Azer. Thank you all for listening and joining us on this Thursday morning or whenever you're listening. We got a FanDuel giveaway coming up later. So we'll talk about Odor, plenty of pitchers. I almost ran out of time getting through the games. There was so much to get to from yesterday, but Julio Teheran struck out 11. Just so much happened. So I will ask you guys, I'll start out the show with this. Who have you been excited about adding to your roster lately? And you're not allowed to say Kyle Schwarber.
Kyle Schwarber!
Too easy!
It would have been Rougned Odor, except I picked him up weeks ago. Why is his ownership still so low?
68%.
Ridiculous.
That's a lot less than Schwarber. Not that Schwarber shouldn't be owned.
You're not allowed to say the word Schwarber in this conversation.
I'm not.
No, Jock.
I don't know. If Kyle Schwarber does what Rougned Odor has done since getting recalled, I think we'd all be pretty pleased with Kyle Schwarber's performance.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Odor's been... Man, I want to run the numbers to see
just
where
look at
he ranks
the notes.
Among second baseman.
Look
He's
at the
definitely
notes,
been
friend.
A top five fantasy second baseman. I looked it up a couple days ago. I've been looking at Taylor Youngman. I picked him up in one league. Not super excited to add anyone right now, though. I guess Joe Ross. I'm excited for Joe Ross if he can stay in the rotation.
Yeah, that's a good call because he's still widely available. I mean, Aaron Nola was a big pickup a week ago. But there haven't been any guys who is there somebody you're exciting about, Adam? Is there somebody you're looking for us to say?
No, not really. I think, I wanted to hear from you, Scott, since you haven't been on since Monday. And I know that you were a person who was very high on Joe Ross, and you must have been pleased with what you saw the other day, but, you know, we don't know what his long-term outlook is, and maybe I was just missing someone. So I thought I'd give you guys the floor.
How about this? Our listeners should be excited to pick up Rougned Odor.
Yeah.
They should be.
It's
And Rougned Odor should serve as a lesson every time a big-time prospect comes up and doesn't perform well right away.
Michael Franco, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
this
another.
Is a thing I've been hitting all season long.
I mean, really, Mike Trout could be another example.
Joey Gallo is going to be that next one. When he comes up, he's going to be awesome.
What about Buxton? Who's more likely to be that next one?
Yes. These guys are still talented.
Because they come up and we have to hype them because of the upside. You just don't find that kind of upside on the waiver wire normally. And so then when they disappoint, which maybe there's a coin flip chance they do, I'm just pulling a number out of thin air. I feel like fantasy owners are so quick to call them a bust because they had built up this expectation that the player didn't live up to. I don't think it ever pays to kind of, set a projection for a player and then operate as if that's the full range of possibilities for a player. And if he falls short of that,
it's
over.
If
you know?
He doesn't hit it, he's never going to.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was saying, but an easier way to say it.
Baseball is a very difficult game. We've seen lots of guys fail very badly before figuring it out. It's not the next guy who does it won't be the last.
Well, you know who homered yesterday?
Who's that?
Jed Jerko. Why isn't he ever joining this discussion?
There's a part of my brain, stupid though it may be, that whenever Jackie Bradley finds up on
that
roster,
stupid. That is dumb. Yeah.
I will be interested in him. Well, look at Cameron Maybin this season.
I don't think it's stupid. Obviously, you talk about guys like Jerko, who's had two full seasons and half of one already, or Bradley, guys who have gotten a longer stretch of time for that to make that switch flip, and they still haven't. The longer that goes on, the more confidence you lose, you should lose. But there's still cases like JD Martinez.
Yeah.
How many years did it take him to figure it out?
And you know, Jackie Bradley. I'm looking at it right now. He's got an 888 OPS at AAA this year. So it's like,
well, what was his OPS last year?
What?
What was his OPS last year?
It was in the 700s.
Okay, Chris. Look, I agree. You don't just give up on a prospect. even if he had struggled before. I get what you're saying about Jackie Bradley Jr. But you do have to understand, from a fantasy owner's perspective, if he comes up, we can't just be like, oh, prospect's back up. He's going to be better this time around.
That's not what I'm saying. It's more I'm keeping an eye on it.
Yeah.
Just like with Odor, when he came up, I was interested. And then when he came up and started hitting, you know, hits in his first three games, that was when I was like, okay, I'm going to take a flyer on him because the talent is still there. This is still a guy that hit 9 home runs in 110 games or whatever it was last season.
Right. Right. I mean, that's why I talk about sometimes, perception playing into the way you act as a fantasy owner. Somebody who gets called up for the first time, and we haven't seen anything from them yet, they haven't disappointed us yet. Like an Aaron Nola, you have to act right away, because if you don't, somebody else will, and you'll just miss your chance at him. But when it's somebody returning after already disappointing us, you can afford to hold back and wait, because you know that player left a bad taste in everybody's mouth the last time, and they're not going to be so quick to pick him up.
And you know what? I just did it with Marcell Ozuna, picked him up in a keeper league, because somebody dropped him. Why not?
You know what I have trouble with in fantasy is the guy that we didn't have high expectations for that gets off to a good start, and then how long of a leash do you give that guy when he struggles? And
why don't you just say Devin Travis's name?
No, I was going to talk. I was saying Cody Anderson and Mike Montgomery. Are they guys that you're just ready to? And Robbie Ray. You know, do they have such a short leash, or should we give them the opportunity that every player should have, is the right to slump? You know what I mean?
I think it depends mostly on skill set. With Cody Anderson, the skill set isn't there for him specifically. But if you show skills that are translatable in the minors, and then like a better a good example of this might be Chris Heston.
Yeah.
Who, when he came up, he joined the rotation at the beginning of the season only really because of injuries. But we looked at him, we saw his minor league numbers, and said, there might be something here with this guy. And then he starts showing those translatable skills early in his career, and we say, okay, let's keep it, let's look at him, and that's why he's been fantasy relevant all season. Cody Anderson, I just don't think the skills are there.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll talk
probably the one I would be most inclined to let go if I put any stock in him already. You kind of lumped Robbie Ray in there, and I do still like the underlying numbers Robbie Ray has, but he's only 35% owned, and it's not like it's translated to much fantasy production yet, because he hasn't been pitching in deep into games consistently. So he's still in that I'm keeping an eye on him phase, with the hope that eventually he gets to a point where he's worth picking up.
Are you ready to talk about Kyle Schwarber?
I'm always ready to talk about Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, yeah. Email of the day number one is from Dan. Dear Lewis, Gilbert, and Booger.
I don't know.
Oh, that's just so bad. He was anticipating a nerd show. This is Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Who is better, Kyle Schwarber or Roy Hobbs? Discuss.
You know, it's kind of funny. I was thinking the other day about Kyle Schwarber and just how good he's been from the beginning. And when I say from the beginning, I mean from the time he was drafted. You look at his minor league numbers.
They're ridiculous.
He just ripped through every level in the year plus he was down there. And then he's done it in the majors, too. So he's kind of done what I was expecting Chris Bryant to do when he got called up. Not to say Bryant's been bad.
Bryant's been fine.
He's been fine. But Schwarber has really brought that electricity I thought Bryant would, and feel All like right. He's gonna be good.
At the Fantasy Baseball Today blog yesterday, I ranked the top 20 rookies for keeper and dynasty purposes. So basically the next 5 years. I had Schwarber all the way down at 8th. Do you think that's too low?
Well, we need to know who was in front of him.
Well, in order: Carlos Correa, Chris Bryant, Jock Peterson, Noah Syndergaard, Byron Buxton, Joey Gallo, Steven Matz.
Don't you have some doubts about Gallo just because of all the strikeouts? You know, you've talked about it. It's ridiculous how many times he strikes out.
Yes, but he also came up and basically I think his hard hit rate would have been second in the majors behind Giancarlo Stanton if he qualified for the full season. His home run to fly ball ratio would have been.
Yeah.
So actually, he had a higher hard hit rate than Giancarlo Stanton. Like,
so, I mean,
the
what's,
raw power
he's
is
Chris
so
Davis.
Ridiculous.
Is he Chris is that, Davis?
I think when you look at him, Mark Reynolds might be his floor.
Like, which that's is a low floor.
That's a low floor, but like that's still like I'm talking like peak Mark Reynolds. Like,
yeah.
When he was hitting 40
okay.
home runs a
okay.
year.
I know, but it's like even with all those home runs and all that hard hit balls, I still feel like he wasn't all that good in fantasy, Joey Gallo, because his batting average was so bad and he struck out all the time.
Well, this is what you're kind of doing what I said you shouldn't do in fantasy, which is put this singular expectation on a player. This is the kind of player he's going to be. We don't really know how good or bad Gallo is going to be. The strikeout rate is alarming, and it probably gives him the lowest floor of those players yeah. you listed off, Chris. But the upside is so high. I mean, he could be like a Giancarlo Stanton yeah. level player too.
Well, just because Schwarber is catcher eligible, I think that would Gallo would be the only guy on that list that I think maybe Schwarber could jump over.
Okay,
but it seemed like a good list to me. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah. No.
This rookie class is absurdly stacked.
Yeah,
yeah,
great.
It's good.
Okay, I want to get into yesterday's stuff here. But first, let's spend a minute on this. Email of the day number two is from Chris. Can you discuss Evan Longoria and what you see going on with him? I haven't heard any discussions of his decline. Should I drop him or is he worse than any of these guys? Longoria. Plouffe, Valbuena, Lori, Espinoza, Josh Harrison, Ryan Zimmerman.
I think he's probably still more valuable than any of those guys. Even with how disappointing he's been.
He's kind of, I kind of feel like he's solidified the decline this year. He and Jason Kipnis were the two guys coming into the year who seemingly for no good reason fell off last year. And so we're kind of banking on both bouncing back. Kipnis has, Longoria hasn't. Doesn't mean I can explain what's gone wrong for him anymore. But I agree with you that there's not enough promise in any of these waiver options to swap Longoria out for him. Although I did notice the other day, Trevor Plouffe is now a top 10 third baseman in points leagues.
Yeah, he's a weird guy because he's been really solid for most of the season, and it just feels like nobody is all that interested in him.
Well, the raw numbers don't look impressive.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of doubles and enough home runs, I think, that he's actually sandwiched between Carpenter and Seager in head-to-head points this season. And
there was actually a really good Grantland piece a couple days ago about his decline, if you want to check that out. It goes really in-depth.
Longoria's.
On Longoria, yeah. And it's just about... Basically, he can't hit for power anywhere but down the left field line, and there's not really any good explanation for it. There's someone from the Rays organization points out that apparently the park has become less conducive to power in the alleys over the last three seasons, but there's not really any physical
explanation.
It's the same place. Like, it's not like there's any weather pattern. It's not like climate change has changed the weather pattern, so it's strange. It really does seem to have no explanation beyond the fact that I guess he's had some recurring injuries over the last few seasons with his wrists and forearms that he's tried to play through, and maybe it's a thing that he just hasn't allowed himself to get healthy with.
Now, this is interesting because, not to hijack the conversation here, Adam, but Nelson Cruz homered twice yesterday. It was three home runs, as many home runs in his last two games as in his previous 45. So, and obviously, it's a streaky player who seems to be back on the upswing now. That's a simple enough way to explain it because of his history. But I was reading some of the comments from Lloyd McClendon and Cruz himself, and basically, I feel like this is kind of a theory of mine. I feel like when players slump and get hot, they get hot and cold. It does happen to every player over the course of the season, but there is still an underlying explanation for it. It's just something so small that either it's not worth mentioning or nobody notices it. And Lloyd McClendon pointed out that the last couple weeks before the All-Star break, Cruz had lowered his hands in his stance because he was getting tired, presumably, because he hadn't had a break in forever. And that probably had an impact on his power.
Yeah, I saw something recently about Robinson Cano standing up less upright in his stance than he was earlier in the season. It just these small things sometimes defy explanation.
So my point with Longoria is if suddenly he blows up in the next 3 weeks, hits 8 home runs, it could just be during the last year and a half his hands were a little out of place or something, and it's thrown everything off. I mean, that's kind of frustrating that there can be that
chaos theory.
Yeah, but it's true. I think it's true in baseball more than any other sport because it's such a everything is just so like it's
there's
so
very
much
little
finesse
margin
in everything.
Very little margin for error.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about some mysterious starting pitchers based on their starting percentage. And their ownership percentage, it's clear that fantasy owners want to keep these guys, but don't know if they want to start these guys. So here we go. My second attempt at something clever with this. A mystery wrapped in a riddle inside of an enigma in a labyrinth looking into a funhouse mirror doing a Rubik's Cube. Okay. Julio Teheran.
Is that from somewhere or did you make it up?
No, I made it up. You know, the mystery wrapped in a riddle in an enigma thing.
I just wondered if anybody had gone that far with it before.
I had once. Al suggested adding Rubik's Cube to it, so I did.
Okay.
I changed it up a little bit. I think the funhouse mirror was different.
Okay. Very clever.
Thank you. Julio Teheran, 11 strikeouts. Could have had a much better outing. Nick Markakis misplayed a ball, and that led to a 3-run inning. Not the only thing that led to it, but I don't know. I don't know what to do anymore with Teheran. Anibal Sanchez is 94% owned. He's 77% started. Of all these guys that we're going to talk about, Sanchez has the highest start percentage. The rest are in the 650s or 60s. He's just, I don't know, 459 ERA kind of explains
it. He's been better lately than
he has got a 444 ERA in his last four starts. He's just winning a lot lately. 6-0 in his last seven starts at Anibal Sanchez.
Yeah, you go back a little further, the ERA is right around 3.
Yeah.
I know, but it's just like,
I feel like most of his season-long ERA is from the first six starts or so when he was allowing a bunch of home runs. And for the most part, he's been fine since then. Not super reliable, but okay.
I also feel like a typical start for Anibal Sanchez might be like 7 innings, 4 runs. Which isn't that bad, but at the end of the day, it's a bad ERA.
Yeah.
You know? Or 7 innings, 3 runs even isn't a great ERA. Right. Okay, anyway. Colin McHugh, 69% started. Let's see. Last six starts, 2.61 ERA, but only 29 strikeouts and 41 1/3 for McHugh. Edinson Volquez, has a 3.15 ERA, but that's largely because of a 1.91 ERA in April, and he has held opponents to a 1.86 batting average against with runners in scoring position. And CJ Wilson, just kind of meh, 85% on 53% started. So I guess my question is, with these guys, are any of them, I don't think they're must starts. Are any of them like almost always starting? And like, how do you separate Teheran, Sanchez, McHugh, Volquez, CJ Wilson?
I mean,
who are you most confident in?
Sanchez, actually.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I think Teheran and McHugh both have more upside, but they've been, Teheran especially has just been unreliable, and McHugh, I really don't understand why he continues to give up so many hits, because he's like in the bottom 25% of qualifying pitchers in hits allowed, or hits per 9 innings. So,
yeah.
And he's not getting strikeouts, and it's just, I don't really know what to make of McHugh anymore. Teheran, I just think, needs to figure it out, and he's made progress recently.
24 strikeouts and 18 2/3 over his last three starts is definitely promising for a guy whose strikeout rate has not been very impressive this season.
And 4 straight starts with 13 or more swinging strikes for Teheran, so he's fooling batters again.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I want to either give up on him or just start him already, because he's basically, yeah. He's probably been like this for a lot of owners, just been on my bench for so long. This week I actually started him, you know, in the 10-day week because he had two home starts, and Teron's usually pretty good at home, but he really wasn't his last time out before yesterday. Also, yeah. 3 walks in 4 straight games for Teron.
If I could only own one of them, I think Teron's the guy that I would rather own. I think he's got more upside. But whether you can start him, you still probably need to see another couple strikes, a couple starts where he racks up those big swinging strike totals.
If there were, and I also want to see him do it on the road, Chris, because like he's been mostly home during this good streak. If there were one or two pitchers here that you'd consider dropping for, could we drop any of them for Joe Ross? Obviously, Rougned Odor would be a different situation, but one of these hot waiver wire pickups is out there. Teron, Sanchez, McHugh, Volquez, CJ Wilson. Could you see yourself dropping any of them?
I think Volquez and Wilson are in a different category from the other three because there's so much limit to their upside. Volquez, I would be perfectly fine dropping for Ross, particularly if it was like a 10-team or even a 12-team, 21-man roster, that kind of shallow league where Volquez just isn't going to be a difference maker even when he's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good call by Heath yesterday, though, picking that revenge game as a sneaky FanDuel play for Edinson Volquez. Get to the news now. Jonathan Papelbon's trade value, not what it once was. I don't really know what Philadelphia's doing, but doesn't seem like a certainty that he's going to get traded anymore.
Isn't what it once was.
They are the Boston Celtics of baseball in that they keep waiting way too long to make a move on their guys.
How is Papelbon's trade value?
I don't know. This is what ESPN reported, that a bunch of teams aren't interested anymore. A number of teams are not interested anymore. Just
probably because he's got that vesting option that's sure to kick in at the end of this season.
Yeah. Jason Vargas has a torn UCL, and Yordano Ventura. Do you think that this day in the minors is going to straighten things out for Yordano Ventura?
I think he's learned a lot. mostly that he doesn't want to fly coach back to Omaha.
Yeah, he's going to start on Sunday.
I think that's a big lesson.
So you talked about picking up Taylor Youngman, Chris. Well, Craig Counsell says that Kyle Loesch's track record will keep Loesch in the rotation for now. This is important because Willy Peralta's on his way back. Maybe another rehab start for Peralta. They haven't quite announced who's going to be in or out. But it wasn't the strongest endorsement of Kyle Loesch. So I don't think it's out of the question that the Brewers, who have been playing very well lately, would take him out of the rotation and give Youngman more security.
The one thing I would say is it might not be in Craig Counsell's hands in 8 days. And Kyle Loesch is a very obvious trade candidate.
Who the hell is going to trade for Kyle Loesch?
He's an innings eater, and there's value in that in the back of your rotation down the stretch. If you're the Dodgers and you have a bunch of unknowns in the back of your rotation.
Oh, speaking of the Dodgers, Brett Anderson might actually make his next start. Might not go on the DL. Freddie Freeman could be back by the end of the month, so that's good news for him. Tony Cingrani was sent to AAA after yesterday's start.
Deservedly.
Yeah, he did not pitch well. He doesn't throw. I remember him throwing really hard when he came up. He's throwing like 92.
I don't think he threw that much harder than that.
No?
It was a lot of just his delivery, how deceptive it was.
Okay.
And I don't know. I'm not feeling great about Cigrani's future at this point. I think
there's any way you can.
Yeah, I would.
He's gonna make a heck of
I don't know that we can say for sure he will make another start in the majors.
He's gonna make a heck of a reliever someday.
Well, there's value in that.
Yeah.
Very important these days. Clay Buchholz had a platelet-rich plasma injection in his elbow. He'll be shut down for a while. No timetable for Buchholz's return. I don't even think I put Brian Johnson in the notes. When did he pitch? Tuesday? He was really bad.
Yeah, 2 days
ago.
Yeah,
he wasn't impressive, though.
Okay, so we don't need to pick up Brian Johnson, right?
He is one of the most added players in CBSSports.com leagues.
He'll be on the most drop list soon.
Oh, we can't. He'd gone like 15 days between starts, and it was his first start in the majors. I'm not ready to say.
I'm just saying.
You're doing this, Adam.
No,
you're doing
I
told people not to do.
But no, I am doing exactly what you said to do at the same time, because perception is important. As you mentioned, I don't think you have to own Brian Johnson right now.
Right. But if he's one of the most added players still, then I don't think perception has quite swung the other way enough yet.
Well, was,
he's only 29.
No, that takes time to refresh.
All right, he's
though.
Only 29% owned.
Yeah, so. I think he'll be dropped. I feel like he'll be down like to 20% or so. The way the most out of this works, it's not every day that it updates, is it?
But if he throws 6-1 innings and strikes out 7 next time, could be all over that.
I just don't know if that's going to be. When is his next start? Is it Sunday or is it Monday? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know that people are going to hang on to him for next week. Well, all right, whatever. We'll see. I don't say give up on him. I just don't think you have to own him right now based on ownership percentage and his first start. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Jed Lowry began a rehab assignment. This is awkward. What do you think? Third base for Lowry?
He'll get in there for sure with how well he was hitting. It's hard to say he'll play every day.
All right, but we don't have to worry about Correa, right?
No, not a chance.
Okay. Very, very safe to say that.
Coco Crisp.
Did you hear
Go ahead.
The condescension and Chris's laughter there.
You know, Chris, I have to ask questions, even the ones that I know the answers to, because other people.
I was just giving an honest answer.
Go cover basketball, Chris. Coco Crisp could be back soon. This is awkward. We don't have to worry about Billy Burns, do we? What do you think Coco Crisp's role could be?
How can the A's rely on him at this? Like, he just gets hurt. That's what he does.
Maybe they stick him in left and put Zobrist at second and get that glasses guy out of there.
That's another one that might be taken out of their hands too.
Yeah, it's true.
If the Mets can scrounge up some money from their couch cushions. Apparently they can't come up with the $2 million that Ben Zobrist is owed for the rest of the season.
Oh, dear.
He would help them quite a bit. David Peralta was hit by a pitch in the head by Jose Fernandez. It hit his shoulder first and then his head, and he's day-to-day. He passed the concussion test. Looks like he figuratively dodged a bullet, but literally did not really dodge a bullet, considering it was a fastball from...
Yeah.
Anyway, then Jose Fernandez went to check on David Peralta. The Diamondbacks got really pissed off about it. They started whining about it. Then they threw at Christian Yelich, and their pitcher and their manager got ejected. It was childish, but
chaos.
It's the dumbest thing in professional sports.
Yeah. Wait, I had a really dumb question to ask, but I have to look something up first.
Was it something that would make Chris laugh?
I hope so. Hopefully it's going to make everybody laugh. Miguel Sano returned. He had a couple of walks and a strikeout yesterday. Mike Trout returned. Do we have to worry about Daniel Robertson's playing time in center field for the Angels?
Really?
No, that's a stupid question. Because he filled in for Trout. Because Trout DH'd and then he moved to center field. All right, Billy Hamilton led off in the second game of the doubleheader yesterday against the Cubs, but Brandon Phillips was sitting, so we'll keep an eye on that. And Justin Morneau, he may not play again this season because of his concussion and his neck injury. FanDuel's very interesting tonight. Clayton Kershaw is so expensive, I don't know if you can afford him.
Oh, come on.
It's tough. There's only 7 games tonight, so it's tough, but I'm sure Scott will make a case for it. More on that a little bit later. Get on FanDuel right now and start playing and join our contest. Compete against us. FanDuel.com/CBSPod. FanDuel.com/CBSPod. I've got the winning strategy. The winning strategy is if there's a guy that I initially like and then I take him out of my lineup, I should tell everybody on Twitter and then you should start him because he will be Preston Tucker and he will hit 2 home runs. I seem to do this all the time. Very frustrating. But, yeah, you can play the day games. You can play the night games. Compete with us, FanDuel.com/CBSPod, and go there now. Look, it's not just basketball. They already have pricing up for football for week 1. Or it's not just baseball, I meant to say, but there's basketball, there's football, there's hockey. There's a whole bunch of stuff on FanDuel. And if you use our offer code, CBSPod, if you click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner, you're going to get your first deposit up to $200 matched dollar for dollar on FanDuel.com, and that is earned as you play. Today we're giving away to 2 people $5 in FanDuel cash, so tweet me at Adam Azer. I must say that although you guys benefit from winning the money, I have been benefiting from gaining more Twitter followers out of this, which is a nice little thing.
But tweet Adam your best dumb question.
Okay, about your best stupid question, handle hashtag FanDuel. Handle? Hashtag FanDuel. And see if you can get Jose Bautista to follow me, too, because he apparently doesn't play FanDuel because he doesn't follow me. So, anyway, $5 cash to two winners at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Wednesday standouts. You guys want first licks here? Who stood out to you?
Yeah, I was going to. We already talked a lot about him, but the big one for me was Teron. Actually striking guys out for the third straight start, so that was a really good sign for me.
I think Brandon Crawford homered for the second straight game and really picked it up again with the power after there was a 2-3 week stretch there where it looked like, okay, here we go again. Brandon Crawford got all his power out of the way early. And it doesn't seem like that's the case. And he's a guy I actually got to talk to in Cincinnati. And I asked him about that specifically, the improved power this year. He said he just felt like when he came up, he had to be a guy who just slapped it over the infielder's heads. Like he wouldn't, if he tried to drive the ball, it just wouldn't go well for him. And he's kind of loosened up on that approach. Make of that what you will. But I thought there was some. It seemed like a credible explanation, and here he goes, hitting home runs still. Good shortstop,
yeah.
Owning fantasy.
He's in three up actually. Well, not anymore because Scott took him. But Crawford, he's a guy that I thought had really cooled down since his hot start, and I just went back to Baseball Reference and looked at his game log. And if you want to get really nitpicky, you could say, well, from this stretch he did this and it wasn't good. But really, he hasn't been as amazing as he was at first, but he's been pretty consistent, especially at the shortstop position. So kudos to Brandon Crawford. I guess
also,
you've said your piece.
I keep making a half-hearted argument against starting Jose Fernandez in FanDuel in the office. It's you have to.
Well, listen.
He's averaging 13 pitches per inning. I know he's got an innings limit or a pitch count that they're sticking to pretty strongly, but he's gone 7 innings in 2 of his 4 starts without topping 96.
And 6 innings
in
the other
two,
which is, it's not like that's bad.
And
he's so efficient.
He hasn't topped 96 pitches.
So efficient for a strikeout pitcher.
Yeah, he's utterly dominant right now.
Well, look, he's great, and Fernandez struck out 11 last night, but he did give up. Now, this is just kind of an interesting stat. It doesn't really matter in fantasy, but it's just interesting, so I'm not criticizing him. But he gave up 3 runs in 7 innings last night, which is like Anibal Sanchezian. And his career on the road, Jose Fernandez has a 3.87 ERA, which is like, well, I just think it's interesting. It's a 1.17 ERA at home. And last night, great start against the Diamondbacks, but what, I don't know what 3 runs in 7 innings comes out to be. I can do
it's
the
like
math.
It's like 3.77 or something.
Okay. So that's just kind of, that's a typical road start for Jose Fernandez.
You know what? I'm cutting him.
Well, like I said, jerk, it doesn't matter in fantasy. It's just interesting. His ERA at home is 1.17 in his career and 3.87 on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, it's only, what, 16 starts in each place, basically?
Yeah.
17 starts, something like that. So I expect that to normalize eventually. But it's also possible that he's, a better Lance Lynn in that regard, I guess.
Okay, more standouts. Scott, when Eugenio Suarez got called up to replace Zach Cozart, you said, don't count out Eugenio Suarez as a shortstop replacement. And since his call-up, he is 10th in points and 6th in Roto with a .306 average and 5 home runs. 6 walks of 32 strikeouts, though, in 33 games. What do you think about Suarez, who's only 20% owned?
I think the reason he's not picked up in more leagues is because people hear us say his name and they just have no idea how to spell it. Eugenio.
And it looks like Eugenio.
It does look like Eugenio. And I've gotten some comments on Twitter of, oh, you're butchering his name. It's not pronounced that way. Well, I don't know where you're getting your information from, because certainly Baseball Reference says it's Eugenio. And I don't know if you checked out a broadcast yet, Adam.
No, I'm going to do it right now. I was just trusting you on that.
I like your Twitter guy voice.
You're mispronouncing his name.
You dumb jock.
Like, why do you pretend to know it all when you don't? Like, why?
Okay, but before you go on this rant, if the Reds announcers do pronounce it as Eugenio or something, like, are you going to feel kind of bad?
If the Reds announcers do?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll feel bad.
I gotta take the headphones off right now to listen. But go on and talk about Suarez and whether maybe some guys you drop for him. Would you drop like an Elvis Andrews for him? Just talk about where you see Suarez rest of the season.
Yeah. I wouldn't be going wild over Suarez if he didn't play shortstop because strikeout to walk ratio doesn't look great, and you know, maybe he's performing over his head with the batting average, and when that falls, maybe the power does slow down. But I do think there's some raw power there, just looking at the minor league numbers. You combine his minor and major league stats this year and project them over 162 game season. He's on about a 25 homer pace, so it's not like it's just
now
a
that
fluke
is
thing that's happened in the majors.
Way over the pace that he's sustained in the past. Last season he had 12 home runs in, what, like 130 games, which is still pretty good pace. If he's a 15 homer guy at shortstop, that's still very valuable because of how bad the position is.
And I wouldn't even count his major league time last year as part of that. And in the minors, he was hitting for more power before the Tigers called him up. But it's kind of what we were saying about Rougned Odor. Actually a very similar situation because he got called up probably earlier than he should have as an injury replacement. And, underwhelmed. And so I think he's getting too much.
But he has been very good in the upper minors. 753 OPS in 153 games at AA, and then 813 OPS in 69 games in AAA. And that's in the International League, not the PCL. So it's a little more impressive than it otherwise might be.
All right, let's go to our next. First of all, I've been hearing it pronounced as Suarez, but I haven't heard the first name yet. Preston Tucker did homer twice yesterday, so he's got some interesting splits. Tucker is 17% owned. He stinks against lefties. 218 with two doubles and 55 at-bats. But against righties, 283 batting average, 349 on base, 551 slugging in 138 at-bats. Yeah, I know, right? And at home, Preston Tucker has a 916 OPS, and on the road he has a 697 OPS. So I never know, like, what happens if he faces a righty who he kills on the road, where he's terrible.
I wish there was some way we could isolate that. There's no, like, Fangraphs or Baseball Reference don't do that. You can't isolate versus a certain type of hand in a certain place.
Well, he's 17% owned. I did it with the Rangers because I noticed that they had been facing a lot of lefties lately, and I thought that was hurting Shinsu Chu. I haven't done it with the Astros to see who they've faced lately, but for a guy who does that well against righties, about a 900 OPS. Should Preston Tucker, 17% owned, be owned in more leagues?
Well, probably more than 17.
My go-to would be how much is Andre Ethier owned? I think that's closer to 50%, I guess.
Oh, boom! A. Eugenio Suarez, according to the Reds announcement.
There you go. There you go, tweeters.
You're butchering.
53% owned for Andre Ethier. And so, I guess you could say Preston Tucker should be more owned. Probably not as much as Andre Ethier, obviously. But
not as much as Andre Ethier. No. He actually plays against some left-handers, unlike Ethier.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily
good. Stinks against them.
In points leagues, it's a good thing.
Is it, though? Because I feel like he's more likely to have, like, a negative point.
Yeah, he's got two doubles.
You can't get that many negatives.
He's got two doubles and no home runs and 55 at-bats. That's pretty bad.
As a hitter, you don't get that many negatives.
All right, I'll buy that. But maybe in Roto, he might not. Ethier just hasn't really been a good player for a while.
I think it's also Ethier's over-owned.
Yeah.
I would say Preston Tucker shouldn't be owned in 53% of leagues. Maybe he should be owned as much as Andre Ethier, but Ethier is over-owned.
So we're going to have to speed things up here, but let's get to a few more guys. John Danks, anyone care?
Nope.
Okay, that's good speeding things up. Sonny Gray. Now, can't complain too much about last night's start, But remember all the strikeouts. And now, over the last six starts, Gray has 27 strikeouts in 41 innings. So he has a 3.95 ERA in that stretch. There have been some bad starts. I think last time we talked about it, Al said, not worried. But now let's talk about, is he going to be a middle-of-the-road strikeouts guy like he was last year, 7.5 per nine? Sonny Gray, what do you think?
Can I split the difference?
Yeah.
I think he'll be better than he was last year, but I don't see him as like this more than a strikeout per inning guy.
This is a situation where the difference between K per nine and K percentage is actually worth looking at, because his K per nine is identical, but because he's seeing fewer batters per inning, his strikeout percentage is actually higher. It's only 1% higher, but that's a bigger gap than his K per nine.
And he's still 136 and two-thirds innings, which is very good. So even at 7.5 per nine, he could throw enough innings where he still has a good strikeout season, right?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that the better you pitch, the worse you look by K per nine. It's kind of a weird stat in that way.
I see where you're coming
from.
You
see you're facing fewer batters in an inning. You have fewer strikeout opportunities.
But when you see a guy's K per nine rise, he's usually pitching better.
Yeah. Strikeout percentage indicates that he's actually striking out more batters.
So strikeout percentage is a better thing to look at than strikeouts per nine?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Fringy starting pitchers. Just give me three or four that you want in this group. There were a lot of them last night. Montgomery, Kyle Hendricks, Matt Cain, Mike Leake, Cody Anderson, Mike Bolsinger, Ivan Nova, Robbie Ray, and Kevin Gausman. Read the list again here. Montgomery, Hendricks, Cain, Leake, Cody Anderson, Mike Bolsinger, Ivan Nova, Robbie Ray, and Kevin Gausman.
I'm getting a little close to jumping off the Montgomery bandwagon. I was never fully on it, just because the strikeouts aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So the last few starts are definitely not encouraging. I'll push him to the side and say Hendricks, Cain, and even though he's been bad, I'll still go with Gausman's potential.
Were we ranking them?
Yeah, give me your top three.
He said pick three.
Okay. I'll still go Montgomery one, but it's dependent on him having the control he's shown most of the time he's been up in the big leagues, and not what he had in this start, where walks were the issue for him in the minors too. So if he keeps doing that, he's going to have bad starts. And I'll go Cain after him, and Hendricks and Leake.
Okay, nobody said Bolsinger.
No.
Not that I disagree, but here's something I do want to point out about Bolsinger, because my big beef with him is, I guess the Braves were yelling at him because he was throwing too many curveballs. They were like, throw some fastballs.
Really?
That's what I read, and like, it was, I don't know, they were getting very frustrated.
Throw too...
I would assume it's in jest.
He's like a junk baller, basically. He doesn't have a good fastball, and he doesn't throw it very often, so...
Yeah.
My thing with him is that for Bolsinger is that the second time he has faced opponents, he has struggled just about every time. But
yeah,
here's the schedule for Bolsinger. If he pitches once every five games, he will face Oakland, at Philadelphia, at Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, at Houston, and then at Cincinnati. So he doesn't have any divisional games for like another six starts. It's kind of interesting. And I'm just guessing that the way baseball has done the scheduling is every team is going to finish with a lot of divisional games.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So right now, they're, you know, like, because I saw the same thing with the Nationals. The Dodgers, the Nationals, I'd have to look at the other teams, but the Dodgers are out of the division for a while. Maybe Bolsinger could actually be good, because he was really good yesterday.
Well, I get that argument, and it's just hard to rely on that.
Yeah.
Part of the problem for Bolsinger is he doesn't go seven or even six innings that consistently, so how much fantasy production is it actually leading to? And then the other part problem being I just don't think he's that good, and it's a lot of the element of surprise at work here, because it's such an abnormal curveball.
I think we should also, Chris, clarify the Tulowitzki quote from yesterday.
Okay.
Because taken out of context, it sounded like he was quitting. Like, I have to pretend to think the games matter. But he was actually, like, talking about how he mentally stays focused. It was more of a positive quote than we had portrayed it on the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just want to bring that up.
That was useful.
To be fair. To be fair to Troy Tulowitzki. Mini streaks! Are you interested in any of these mini streakers? Not necessarily picking them up, but in, like, they're going to be better. Ian Desmond, 5 hits in his last 3 games, 4 steals in July. Nick Castellanos, 5 for 7 with 2 homers in his last 2 games. Jung Ho Gong, 4 straight 2-hit games, 43% owned. And Yadier Molina, 9 for his last 21 with a 3-run triple last night.
I don't think Al and I did Jung Ho Gong justice when we were on together Monday, because we both just were kind of like, meh. Even though he's playing every day and shortstop is weak, he's just not doing anything. He's getting on base for the season about 36 or more than 36% of the time. And you project his home runs and stolen bases over a full 162-game season. It's like a 12-12 year, which is better than most of what you'll find at shortstop. And now he's been playing every day, and his performance has actually been better since that started. So I do think he's probably about on Suarez's level in terms of if you have a mediocre shortstop, he deserves to, you can upgrade there with one of those two guys.
Who would you prefer, Scott?
I would guess Suarez.
Really?
Maybe in a points league, Gong instead.
Okay. Was somebody twirling a pen?
Sorry, no.
Name that sound.
I was twisting the bezel on my Spider-Man watch.
What? It was Spider-Man watch?
He's holding it up and showing me if I didn't believe him.
Oh, wait, I got to pull showing you. I got to get Skype up here. Hang on. Let's see. Oh, wow, you really? That is awesome. You dork. Good for you. Good for
you. It was a nerd podcast.
Yeah, you really brought it today.
I'm obviously very, very interested in Ian Desmond showing signs of life. Especially because I went on Twitter and said that I think he's more worth owning than Robinson Cano last week, and I feel kind of dumb about that. So, Ian, make me look good. And the other three I'm not so interested in. Gong, I get it, but it's kind of this thing where, like, if you have a pulse and 4 working limbs, we have to be interested in you at shortstop.
And catcher, too, because Molina's a top 12 catcher.
Guys like mainstays at the position who I feel like people are just holding on to them because their names, like Ibar,
Andrus,
and Alexi Ramirez.
Yeah.
They stink. You can do better now.
But you can't put Ian Desmond in that discussion, right? Too much upside?
Right.
Yeah.
Because the ceiling is so much higher.
I'm going to skip 3 up and 1 down. Nobody in the rotation. Let's just go to the bullpen here. There were some bad outings yesterday. Cody Allen has struggled in 3 straight. That's after 19 straight scoreless appearances in which Allen gave up just 10 hits. Tyler Clippard, 2 bad ones in a row. John Axford has been kind of bad in his last 5 appearances. Andrew Miller gave up a Yankee Stadium 3rd row of the right field seats home run to Chris Davis. Wasn't really a big fly or anything. David Robertson. You know, actually, the line doesn't look so bad because the runs were charged to someone else, but Robertson's having a great year statistically. 55 strikeouts to 7 walks and 37 and 2/3. He has blown some really heartbreaking saves, but he's led to some heartbreaking losses, including last night for the White Sox. And AJ Ramos, what an interesting night for him, huh? Gives up 2 singles and a walk, loads the bases with nobody out, and then he strikes out Goldschmidt, Pollock, and Tomas to end the game. So, all the names I mentioned, could you see anyone losing their job?
I mean, you could definitely see Clippard and Axford, because they're just not that good.
Or they could get traded.
I don't know if either one of those teams has an option behind them. I don't think there's any way Allen or Robertson loses their job. Ramos would have to really struggle, although
Ramos himself could get traded out of a closer
yes.
situation.
I think he's arbitration eligible, so the Marlins could move him. And they do have a guy who's been one of the best relievers in baseball behind him.
Yeah, the cheater.
Carter Capps.
Such a cheater. AJ, who was it? No, it was Chip Hale, I believe, who said that should be illegal. And I agree. Because
Carter,
I bet if,
Carter
like,
Capps, little hop as he throws
if
it.
Other pitchers started doing it, they would ban it.
Look,
I'm almost positive.
All I'll say is nobody cared when he was doing it last season.
I didn't even know he was doing it last season.
Exactly, because he wasn't any good.
But if I had known, I would have said he's cheating and they should change that.
He wasn't any good last season.
Yeah, well, he throws from the batter's box. He basically hands the ball to the catcher.
he leads the league in perceived velocity, which is one of those cool stats that that StatCast tracks. The ball gets to home plate from his hand faster than it does for Aroldis Chapman.
That's because he's 10 feet closer than Aroldis Chapman.
Look, Aroldis Chapman is like 6'8", all right?
No,
why are
we Caps throws,
about him being too tall?
Caps throws pretty hard. He is too tall. They shouldn't let people that tall pitch.
Exactly.
Andrew Miller shouldn't be pitching. It's ridiculous. Okay. News and notes. Grandal's back. Wellington Castillo, hamstring tightness, he's day-to-day. Francisco Cervelli should be back today. You know, Escobar left with a hand injury. Danny Espinosa moved to third. Dan Uggla played second. Ryan Zimmerman's on his way back. So is Rendon. Michael Franco pinch hit yesterday. David Freese out at least 2 weeks with a broken index finger. Taylor Featherston replaced Freese last night. I'm not sure he's long-term. Yeah. You want to be a slugger. That's a great name to have. Drew Hutchison. Sick, not going to start today on the road, which is good because he's terrible on the road. R.A. Dickey is going to start in his place. And Steve Pierce is on the DL. Can we drop Steve Pierce?
Finally drop Steve Pierce, yes. If you've been holding on to him for some reason, you can finally drop him.
We got a late start, so in order to get some DFS in, fly through some emails here. Rustin, Marty, and Maggie is our greeting from Tyler from D.C., and we don't know who they are.
McFlies?
You don't?
Oh, I don't know who they are.
Come on.
Who are they?
Time is a flat circle.
Time
True Detective 1, come on.
Oh,
you
the
said
good
you watched
True Detective.
It.
Yeah, I did. Rustin, that's right, I should have gotten that. If you had said...
You know, when Marty McFly went back to 1885, the... You know, he met that male relative and
time was a flat circle.
And her name was Maggie, the wife.
Oh, that's a good guess. Chris, so, if you had said, I've been driving a Lincoln since long before anybody paid me to do it, just liked him, then I probably would have gotten it. Anyway, Tyler's question, 12-team Dynasty League. Who are some guys you would target for a big 2016 season that I could acquire in a trade or pick up in free agency? My rotation is worse than this current season.
Oh, he dropped the hint.
Yes, I should have read that. All right, so give me a guy if you're in a dynasty league and you're giving up on the year that you think could have a big 2006. Where are we in 15 now? 2016.
Might look at a someone like a Julio Teheran who is struggling in this season, and his owner might be willing to deal him on the cheap.
I've been trying to get Kevin Gausman into Dynasty League. I'm not over his potential, and he continues to underwhelm with it. Also, guys coming back from Tommy John.
That's exactly what
Matt Moore. It's a good choice. Patrick Corbin less so. I'm still not convinced of his upside. But I guess those are
all
the two.
What's his name on the Blue Jays who tore his Achilles or his ACL?
Oh, Marcus Stroman.
Yeah, Stroman.
Yeah.
That was just an ACL,
right,
too.
Right, exactly.
That might not even be that difficult one to come back from.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, I'm going to save the emails for tomorrow. I apologize. This is my fault. I was late for the podcast today, but didn't give great FanDuel advice yesterday. I didn't, so I apologize. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to give it today because it's just a hectic morning, but let's try. Scott, I don't know. I made a Kershaw lineup, and I hate it. I would have to say I hate it. So what do you think? You start him? He's $13,000, $13,500?
Yes. No, he's
$13,000.
And him and the second most – all right, you would agree that pitchers are the most predictable from appearance to appearance.
Yeah.
than batters. I mean, batters can do basically anything on a given day. Pitcher, you have a pretty good idea what to expect from him. Kershaw is averaging 3.2 fantasy points per game more than the next most expensive pitcher or the next best pitcher.
Look, I'm just going to speed it up and say that I cannot argue with you about Kershaw. He's going to have an amazing start against the Mets in all likelihood.
Well,
the
price difference between those pitchers versus the price difference between two hitters and the fantasy points per game aspect. It makes it a slam dunk. You have to pay that for a pitcher as opposed to paying it for a hitter.
But not tonight. The reason why it's not a slam dunk, in my opinion, tonight is just because there are only 7 games, and I found it difficult to feel good about my bargain hitters.
The hitters you pick aren't going to beat Kershaw.
I understand that, but I love Tyson Ross tonight at home against the Marlins. The Marlins are terrible against righties. Ross could get a lot of strikeouts. That could be a win. You know, I'm going with Kershaw. I'll probably have a Kershaw lineup and a Ross lineup.
Kershaw could outscore Ross by 15 points.
That seems like a lot to me, but it's possible. I mean, look, Kershaw has like 27 strikeouts in his last 2 games or something, so I could see it. But who are your cheap hitters that you're going with? You don't have to give your full lineup, but who are some bargain hitters that you're gonna go with if you do go with Kershaw? I have some. If you're not,
I haven't done.
Okay. Well, here are some guys to target. I think if you look at the bad pitchers that are going tonight, Doug Fister against the Pirates, but you know McCutchen, Marte, they're going to be expensive. I'm not sure about Gong. Bartolo Colon against the Dodgers. Now, this is an interesting one.
Ethier.
Yeah, I have Ethier and I have Jock Peterson. Jock Peterson is 2,800 and Ethier is 2,400.
Yep. Good choices.
Yeah, Colon. I don't know. I'm not super confident in the Dodgers there, but we got Samardzija versus Bauer. I'm kind of avoiding it. We have Guthrie at the Cardinals. So Cardinals lefties, I like a lot. Colton Wong is 3,100 and Matt Carpenter is 2,900. You can go with them.
Yep.
You can, Wade Miley at the Astros. I'm not sure who a cheap Astro would be because Preston Tucker is a lefty. I'm not starting him. How about Zach Godley starting tonight against the Brewers? The only problem is, again, I don't really know cheap Brewers that you could go with. I don't know if Godley's a lefty or not, but if he is, maybe you can try Chris Davis. And Tom Kohler. I love me some cheap Padres tonight against Tom Kohler. Although it is a pitcher's park, so maybe Kohler could be okay. And I have Ender and Ciarte going against Mike Fiers, and Ciarte is 2,600. And Ian Desmond is facing Francisco Liriano, but he's 2,300. I don't really feel good about that, but what are you going to do?
I did say that I like Tyson Ross against the Marlins, but I also kind of like Derek Dietrich and Justin Bour. They're the only good left-handed bats in the Marlins lineup, assuming Dietrich plays.
Okay, so I'll just give my lineup. It's Kershaw, Yadier Molina, 2,400, and hot right now, but, you know, whatever. but facing Guthrie. Jose Abreu, who's 6-for-13 in his career against Trevor Bauer with only 1 extra base hit, but he's only 2,900. Colton Wong, Matt Carpenter, Ian Desmond, Ender Inciarte, Jock Peterson, Andre Ethier. Like, there's a lot of upside. I could win a tournament with that lineup, or all of my hitters could be horrible, and Kershaw could be my only good player. And I just don't really like those total swing for the fences lineups. They just don't work out for me very often. That's why I have trouble with Kershaw today. But I'm interested to see, Scott, if you can put together a lineup that you like better than that with Kershaw.
Yeah, I it's going to be hard to beat the people who start Kershaw, which will be the majority of people. I mean, he's going against the Mets.
Yeah, I know.
you don't expect him to score 20-plus points today?
Oh, I absolutely do.
May score 15 if he has a good start, but he's not as likely to have a good start as Kershaw.
There's no way I'm arguing against Kershaw here. You know what I'm saying. It's just I found it today. I couldn't find the cheap hitters that I usually like.
I hear what you're saying. I just think there's the upside is like sometimes there's days when a cheap pitcher measures up to the expensive pitcher in terms of upside, and today is not one of those days.
Look, I mean, Jock Peterson at 2,800, Ian Desmond at 23, Matt Carpenter at 29, Jose Abreu at 29. Actually pretty good values.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of upside with this team. We'll see how we do. Look, we'll see how we do. This will be an experiment.
Yeah.
Any other nominations for pitchers that you might want to go with tonight?
I think it always pays to set a Trevor Bauer tournament lineup when he pitches.
Oh.
Not a cash game lineup because he's so up and down, but the highs are about Kershaw.
Change of plans.
Okay.
I got one website telling me Jeremy Guthrie's pitching today, and I got FanDuel telling me Chris Young is pitching today. And that changes a lot. That makes me like my Cardinals even less.
Yeah.
That makes it even harder to go with Clayton. Crap. I'm sorry, everybody. DF Live is at 4 p.m. Eastern, though. Heath will have great
maybe,
advice for you.
Definitely know who's starting by then.
Maybe Mike Fiers against Arizona. They strike out a decent amount. He's up and down, but I think he's actually been up-ish lately.
Oh, so absolutely.
Maybe if you want to go really cheap, $5,000. If you want to spread $5,000 around, otherwise, he might be worth a look in a tournament.
I am finding another site saying Chris Young, so.
Yeah, I have to scrap it. I can't. Chris Young's just, he's not Guthrie.
Nope.
I gotta scrap that.
And you mean that in a flattering way to
yes.
Young.
Yes. He's a solid pitcher. So, that's not gonna work. Well, I apologize, everybody. I really wanted to give you some advice, but, not today. Watch DF Live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Check it out. Scott and Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good to have Scott White back on the show.
Huh. It's good to be back.
And he'll be back
tomorrow. Be back tomorrow, too.
Perfect.
Whoa. Two days in a row, Scott White.
Unless I get sick or something.
Don't get sick. Possibly. All right, thanks, everyone. See you later.